Matthew chapter 23. And we'll be there in just a moment. The elders gave me a heads up that they were going to be making this announcement, and so I don't have a full sermon. I just kind of have a few comments to make, and then we'll proceed. And I want to make some comments about the building itself, the announcement that's been made. I just found out with you all some of the details, so I don't have any privileged knowledge of that. I'm not on the building committee and all that. But first of all, I just want to say thanks, and I appreciate Brother Smithman's prayer of gratitude that we're in a position to do this, that we need this, and this is a great Sunday to announce it because we're all smushed because the new students are here, school starting tomorrow, and so we see how full we are. And this is a great thing. It's a great blessing, and it's great that we need this to begin with. So let's start with that. Also, let's keep in mind, where's the authority for church building to begin with? You know, church buildings are not specified in the Bible. You know, we don't read about Corinth and how many pews they had and that sort of thing. But we have authority to assemble as a church. And that's how I would justify the church having authority to build a church building. 1 Corinthians 14 talks about the whole church, when the whole church assembles and when you assemble. Acts 20 and verse 7, on the first day of the week when we were gathered together to break bread. Hebrews 10:25, not forsaking our own assembling together. And so we know that it's God's will that local churches assemble. And we need some way of getting that done, whether that's out under a tree or in a building or rent a place or whatever that is. God authorizes us to assemble as a church. And so that's what we're doing with a building. Buildings are not specified, but I believe they are authorized under that general authority churches have to assemble to study and worship together. And Benchley's is another step, as Brother Witt said, in our expansion. Benchley started in 1994, I think, with 26 people in a living room a mile that way at Joe and Sherry's house. And even the living room was small. I think the second Sunday they met in the garage. And so, and then built this building. And then at the time I was coming, I got here in 2003, and then this back wall was pushed back. If you look real careful, there's where you can see where the carpet is different there in the middle, and that's where the old wall used to be. And so I remember preaching the first time after, and I thought, this is such a huge building. The wall's so far back there. And so here we are again, and now we're doing this new building. And that's a wonderful thing. I'm happy about that. I think everybody's happy about that, and we're going to be able to just to exhale when we get the new space and spread out a little bit and have room for more people to join us to worship the God of heaven, which is a wonderful thing. A few things that I want to mention in the minutes we have here. First of all, let's keep our focus spiritual. And that's why I've opened up here to Matthew 23 in verse 5. But they do all their deeds to be noticed by men, for they broaden their phylacteries and lengthen the tassels of their garments. Interesting thing there, you know, physical things have a way of distracting us from the important spiritual stuff. And even these tassels, which were part of the old law, they're supposed to have these tassels on their garments to remind them of God's law. And even something like that can get to be a distraction. And in this case, they're using it to show off. You know, we're going to lengthen our tassels. And then the phylacteries, we're going to literally put pieces of scripture on our bodies. And it becomes a distraction and a show-off-y type of thing. Down in verse 23, what are you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites? For you tithe mint and dill and cumin and have neglected the weightier provisions of the law, justice and mercy and faithfulness. But these are the things you should have done without neglecting the others. You blind guides who strain out a gnat and swallow a camel. And so there again, you know, tithing is specified, but they got so distracted in the physical part of that and then also showing off about that, that the main things were lost, and Jesus is rebuking them for that. So we want to make sure in a building project that doesn't happen, that something physical does not distract us from the spiritual. And I don't think that will. I think it's just something to keep in mind. I don't think any of us are getting distracted by the great building we have right now. You know, it's a building. We use it to function, to do what we're authorized to do, and that's pretty much all there is to it. But the important thing about this building or any new building we build is what we're doing in it, worshiping God. And that's what makes it special. That's what makes it worth our time and resources and effort is what we're doing inside the building. Secondly, let me mention, let's thank God for the building. Again, let's go back to that gratitude that we ought to have. Look in Acts chapter 2. You think about the first church in Jerusalem. The gospel's preached in Acts chapter 2. The first people are being baptized into Christ for the remission of their sins. And 3,000 of them are baptized. And then, you know, where were those 3,000 people meeting together? I mean, both in and outside of worship assemblies, we see that they're in their homes and stuff like that too. But several mentions of this temple and Solomon's portico, Acts 2:46, day by day, continuing with one mind in the temple. In chapter 3 and verse 11, now he was clinging to Peter and John. All the people ran together to them at the so-called portico of Solomon, full of amazement. Chapter 5 and verse 12, at the hands of the apostles, many signs and wonders were taking place among the people, and they were all with one accord in Solomon's portico. So this structure, you know, they were a lot of times meeting there and getting together there, and stuff was happening there. Why that place? I don't know. Probably because when you have 3,000 people, where are you going to put them? And this was a place that was there, and a little bit of protection from the weather and whatever. And so they got together there and were worshiping God together. We don't have 3,000. You know, that would be a pretty big building to fit all 3,000. But what we do have, we're trying to accommodate. And what we think might come in the future as far as people in attendance, we're trying to accommodate. And isn't it wonderful we have that problem? And isn't it wonderful that we have the blessings we do as churches in the United States typically do, that we can even have a building, period. There are a lot of churches around the world that have no such thing, or it's a very, very rudimentary structure, and we have a ceiling over our heads, we have lights, we have PowerPoint, we have pews, everything's comfortable, and air conditioning, all these wonderful things, so that we can just come here and worship and just focus on God and edifying each other, and it's a wonderful blessing. And one time, Brother Witt gave a presentation with pictures from their past, being in the military. They've worshiped all over the world and been in lots of different assemblies, and you don't have this kind of blessing. And Adam and Lindsay and others that have gone all around the world, you know, we are just extremely blessed to have this. A good building is a great blessing, and let's not lose sight of that because we're used to that. We're in the United States. We take it for granted. Let's be grateful. Let's praise and thank God that we're in this situation. Probably most brethren in the world are not. The next point, let's not compromise the gospel so we can fill the pews. Nobody's interested in doing that. But again, it's something for us to keep in our minds. Look in Galatians chapter 1, please. Galatians chapter 1. I don't know what the capacity for this new building is. I'm sure somebody did some calculations on that, but you know, once we all spread out a little bit, I don't know if we'll have any empty pews in that new one. Maybe we'll have some new. I doubt we're going to have like 50 empty pews with nobody there. I don't know. But whatever room we do have, obviously, our goal is not to simply grow in numbers and leave the Lord behind. If we do that, we're doing the opposite of what we want to do. We're trying to glorify Him. We're trying to do what's authorized. We're trying to teach the truth. We have no plans of changing any of that just to try to get more people. It's like, well, we built this building. Now we got to fill it up. We're trying to honor God. We built the building. We're going to go in that building and try to honor God. And whatever the numbers will be, they'll be. But we're just going to try to teach the truth. Galatians 1:10, for am I now seeking the favor of men or of God? Or am I striving to please men? If I was still trying to please men, I would not be a bondservant of Christ. And so Paul would teach a lot of things that would make him unpopular, and people would stone him or people would throw him in jail or whatever. And that needs to be our attitude always. That whatever the consequence, if our attendance drops because they don't like what we're teaching and preaching and making stands on, that's sad. We don't want that. We're not trying to be mean to people, but we are trying to stick with God. We are trying to teach the truth, and let's never let that change, even when we try to get in a new building and we see some empty pews perhaps. Look in Philippians chapter 4. This point... I hope I'm not saying the wrong things. You just evaluate this. I hope I state this accurately. Let me just start with some verses here. Philippians 4 and verse 17. Not that I seek the gift itself, but I seek for the profit which increases to your account. But I have received everything in full and have an abundance. I am amply supplied, having received from Epaphroditus what you have sent, a fragrant aroma and acceptable sacrifice, well-pleasing to God. The context here is the Philippians had sent money to Paul. Paul's a preacher. They're supporting him. It's a wonderful thing. And Paul is thanking them for that. And the Philippians giving money was great, but not just because of the money, but because of what that said about them, the spiritual side of what they did, the gift of money they sent to Paul, their good attitude, their fellowship with God that would cause them to do something like that was a big deal. In other words, the physical part, the money, connected to the spiritual part, their good attitude, their fellowship with God, and so forth. So they didn't just say, you know, we're thinking about you, Paul. That's great, but they also put dollars in his hand. They're taking action and doing that. We can easily go down the wrong path by trying to completely separate the physical and the spiritual elements of our life and of our service. Here's what I mean. When we sing, for example, we know that God looks at our heart. And we often make that point. You know, God's looking at our, you might have a terrible voice. That's right. God looks at your heart. Of course, that doesn't mean you're trying to have a terrible voice. That doesn't mean you're, let's wreck this song on purpose because God doesn't care. Well, we're trying to do both. Our heart is the most important thing, but we're trying to do our best to sing and do a good job with that because it is worship to God. That's one example. When a Christian helps an orphan or a widow or something, we studied James 1:27 recently. You know, you try to do a good job with that. Be as generous as you can be, your situation in life, and you don't just say, well, God's looking at my heart, and so I can give you $100, but here's a nickel instead, because God looks, well, you're trying to do the best with both, right? I mean, you see there's a connection there. And I think there's something to consider there with a church building. God's looking at our heart. The important thing is what we're doing inside the building. We're worshiping God, but that doesn't mean we should try to make the building terrible or trash the building we have. Or, you know, we're trying to do good. This is something that's important. We take it seriously. We're trying to build a something that functions well, that does what we're trying to do. And I'm not trying to say we're going to have golden doorknobs or something, but just that let's just respect this for what it is, that we're using it for the purpose of serving God. And because of that, it is important. An older preacher I used to work with wrote a description of a church building, a little old thing out in the country where he had visited. This is back in the 1930s. This is what he wrote about it. Chicken bones littered the floor, jam biscuits were stuck on the wall, mud had been packed high about the door and tracked throughout, lamp chimneys were black, wicks untrimmed, yet brethren whose homes were clean and neat seemed not to notice these conditions. You know, this can get to the point where it reflects our attitude, that we just have kind of a bad attitude. It's just not important. We come here to worship and who cares? And God looks at our heart. And we can kind of take that to some extreme weird place where we say, well, let's just make it bad on purpose. Look, a church does not even need a building to worship. We need to assemble somewhere, if it's under a tree or whatever, but we're reminded that what we're doing here is important. And whatever we do in our service to God, in the assembly or out of the assembly, let's try to do it well. And so we're not trying to build a dump. We're not trying to trash it once we build it. That's where we're trying to make something that's functional, that's wonderful at accomplishing what we're doing, a well-kept, decent, orderly building where we can come and worship God without distraction. Look in Romans 14. Let me make one last point here. Romans 14. And let's practice love in matters of judgment. And Romans 14 is a great chapter to talk about this because that's exactly what it's talking about, matters of judgment, not matters of sin. These are just matters of opinion in Romans 14. Doesn't matter to God one way or the other. And so Romans 14, 13, he said, here's the attitude you're supposed to have with that. Verse 13, therefore, let us not judge one another anymore, but rather determine this, not to put an obstacle or a stumbling block in a brother's way. I know and am convinced in the Lord Jesus that nothing is unclean in itself, but to him who thinks anything to be unclean, to him it is unclean. For if because of food your brother is hurt, you are no longer walking according to love. Do not destroy with your food him for whom Christ died. You know, in any building project, there are a million decisions that need to be made. And virtually all of them will be matters of judgment, where it doesn't involve sin one way or the other. It's just, you know, what are we going to do with this? How basic is too basic? How fancy is too fancy? How much money do we need to spend on the bathroom fixtures? What color is the carpet going to be? I think there's windows on that drawing we saw. Are we going to have curtains? Are we going to have blinds? Or, you know, What do we want in the nurseries? What about the parking lot? What is it striped this way or that way? All these decisions that are going to be needed to be made by somebody. And I guarantee it's not going to be unanimous on probably almost any of those things. If we surveyed everybody for every decision, there's no way we're going to be unanimous on any of that stuff probably. So let's keep this attitude in mind. Let's be kind. Let's be patient. Let's be loving on these things that ultimately don't matter. Ultimately, just we're trying to get here together. We're trying to worship God. Let's stick to the Bible principles that the whole point of this building is to provide for the assembling of the saints to study together, to edify each other, and to worship the God of heaven. So keep that in mind. Lots of judgment calls to be made. Some I'll agree with, some I won't. Some you'll agree with, some you won't. Wouldn't it be ridiculous, though, if we built this structure so that we can come together and sing about love and praise the God of love, and it becomes a source of bitterness in and of itself? That's the opposite of what we want. That's not happened in this building. I don't expect it to happen in the next building, but let's keep all of that in mind. May God bless us in this work. Appreciate the elders and the building committee and the work that you've already done. May this be another positive step forward in the Benchley Church, and may God be honored in whatever space we occupy, this one, some other one, whatever it is, and may we use our resources wisely so that more souls are brought to him and he is glorified. Thank you for your time this morning. Now's an opportunity. If you want to become part of the Lord's body, if you want to be saved, if you want to be baptized in his name for the remission of sins, if you've done that and fallen away, if you want the prayers of the brethren here, if we can help you in some public way, please come forward while we stand and sing for your encouragement.